You know, as you know, Citizens Climate Lobby, we're all committed to building the political world for climate solutions and for you know, a livable world. And you see that's our vision there on the screen. And you know, as empowered citizens, we do a lot of talking with our neighbors, our friends, local officials about how national climate action can help ensure both, you know, a healthy future for us, but also help strengthen the American economy. Now, our chapters across the U.S., we have, you know, it ranges from high school students to grandparents, engineers in the oil and gas industry, to farmers from Virginia to the, you know, Central Valley in California. And we have PhDs who have spent careers studying climate change, and we've got just citizens, you know, like me and other people who are concerned that really just want to know what they can do to help. The good thing is that no matter what our backgrounds, we're all united with this commitment to make our voices heard and to really call out for a healthy climate. You know, we say this a lot. You know, we talk about, you know, how do you steer a ship that's this large, something CCL, and what we're trying to do. And it's really our local chapters that steer the ship. And, you know, it's the way that we organize ourselves across the country into hundreds of local chapters across the U.S. and across the world. And each one of these chapters is building political support for climate action. And they do so with a variety of tools. And what we're introducing tonight is, and we've been talking about for a couple of years, is really a framework for placing those tools in. And we call those the levers of political will. And so you can see them on the screen right now. We're going to go through each one of those in a little more detail here in just a few moments. But really what the levers do is they provide a framework and a common language for us. But they're not meant to be prescriptive or inflexible. And indeed, at times, you're going to see some of these things, it's kind of a little murky area, like, oh, is this really this lever, that lever? It's not meant to get caught up in which lever it is. It's really just to provide a framework for us and to help us organize our actions a little bit. But we use these levers to help us develop respectful relationships like what we've always done, and to cultivate and demonstrate local support, and, you know, to promote a climate solution that has appeal that's across the political spectrum. And, you know, we talk about political will a lot. And, you know, one of the things we cover on our climate advocate training calls, you know, really, if we say that our goal is to create political will for a livable world, that's our vision, you know, we have an obligation to sort of define what that is when we say that. And so, you know, a boring sort of Webster's dictionary definition of political will is something like this: you know, committed support among key decision makers and those who influence them for a particular policy solution to a particular problem, right? Good old Webster's dictionary. But what does that mean exactly? Well, you know, if we just put it in our own words, that means, you know, us taking actions that's really going to help move the member of Congress in the direction where we'd like for them to be. That's it. Moving Congress to where we want them to be. So as you remember, oops, let's not go to Ashley yet. As you remember from our intro call, and if you've been a part of CCL for a while, you know that we've replicated the model for generating political will that's been used by an organization called Results. And not only that, from, you know, interviewing members of Congress and people who study Congress, we really think that we have a deep understanding about what creates political will at this point. And here's why that's really important for us. It's important because we only ask our volunteers and our chapters to do the things that we know are going to generate political will, right? Specifically, we take actions that we know will be successful in moving the member of Congress in the direction of our legislation. So that's what we talk about when we talk about creating political will and the levers of political will. That's what creates political will. And so we just organize those into five levers. And again, we call them the levers of political will. So in this webinar tonight, we have several CCL staffers who will briefly introduce you to one of the levers, and then we'll stop and take questions at the end. So first up tonight is the wonderful Ashley Hunt Martorano, who's going to talk to us about lobbying. Ashley.
Hey, great. Can you hear me, Ricky?
We hear you great.
Okay, thanks. Great. So I'm the marketing and events director for Citizens Climate Lobby, and I also am the liaison coordinator. So lobbying is kind of one of my things, one of the hats I wear. And so we believe that nothing is more important than citizens meeting frequently with their members of Congress or the staff in the office. So we meet with them often in order to show them that this legislation is something that their constituents want, and then to educate them on how our proposal will impact their state or district. And this is the most highly leveraged activity that we can do. So one other role that I should mention is the role of congressional liaisons. So I'm the liaison coordinator, and I work with the liaisons. We have about 450 of them. So a CCL liaison is someone who is the representative for Citizens Climate Lobby when the group contacts a congressional staff or office. So since there are 535 members of Congress, CCL's goal is to have a personal liaison or two or three for each of those offices and the staff. So the role of the liaison is to build ongoing relationships with their members of Congress and their staff by maintaining regular personal contact and by coordinating the group's communication with that office. So, you know, we're really working on a complex issue, climate change. So it's really important having just that one consistent point of contact with the office for each member of Congress. It makes our process of communicating about climate change and our solution much more efficient and rewarding having that one person. And that's for both CCL volunteers and the congressional staffers with who we're working. And I just want to add to that, you know, for some of the liaisons that have been doing this for a while, they really have developed a good relationship with the staff in the office, so much that sometimes when they go to meet with their staff, they might get a hug. They might get an extra email about something that maybe, you know, about a baseball game if they know your favorite team. So really developing that personal relationship, you can have a lot of just fun and reward coming from that. I just want to clarify, though, that even though we have congressional liaisons, each and every CCL volunteer is encouraged to participate by contacting their member of Congress. So through letters or phone calls, you know, all the different things that we do to generate political will. But you know, the liaison is kind of the person who maybe schedules appointments and follows up whenever certain things are happening in the media or in Congress with votes. So citizen participation can take many forms. It's not just the physical meeting. So you can send personal letters, send personal emails, make phone calls. You can contact members of Congress through their social media accounts, and that might sound silly, but it's actually something we've been learning through our work with the Congressional Management Foundation. The members of Congress have really gotten on board with social media, and that they really take seriously when their constituents are contacting them through Twitter or Facebook. And they can actually tell if you're a constituent or not from your social media accounts. They have a I don't know all the secrets of that, but they have a way of doing that, and they can figure out if you are a constituent or not. So they really do take, when they have constituents contacting them through social media, they really do take it seriously. Another way to participate in lobbying is becoming a subject matter expert. So this would be an expert on a key aspect of carbon fee and dividend. So for instance, how the proposal impacts the district through creating jobs or stimulating the local economy or lessening the local impact. So now I'm going to hand it over to Steve Volk, and he's going to introduce you to the next lever of political will. Steve?
Okay. Great, Ricky. Can you hear me? All right. I got the thumbs up. All right, good. All right. So my name is Steve Volk. I'm the communications director for Citizens Climate Lobby. And the second lever that we're going to talk about for political will is media. We work with print and digital media in order to drive the conversation towards carbon fee and dividend. So this involves writing letters to the editor and op-eds, meeting with editorial boards, pitching story ideas or doing television and radio interviews, and leveraging social media. So why is media important? Members of Congress use the local newspapers, radio and TV stations, and social media to get a pulse of what is happening in their district. A staffer will review the media every day, especially, you know, the stuff that might mention a member of Congress by name, and they'll provide a summary to the member of Congress. So some of the related media activities might include becoming a point person for a local newspaper, to watch for opportunities for writing letters to the editor. And I would really encourage groups to form letter to the editor teams. And so when there is a letter to the editor opportunity, they can pass that on to several members of your team, and you can get a number of LTE submissions that way, and that improves the chances that you'll get something published. The next thing would be writing your own letters to the editor, not just being the person who finds the opportunities, but also writing letters to the editor and op-eds of your own. Then there's getting to know your editorial board and key reporters at your local or state newspaper, and developing those relationships with the media that are going to pay off for you in the long run. And a part of that would be, once you've developed that relationship with an editorial board and you have somebody on the editorial board that you communicate with, from time to time, we have media packets that revolve around our issue and something that's happening in the news. So you could pitch these media packets to editorial writers to generate editorials endorsing CCL's policy. So another thing that you can do is watch out for opportunities to be interviewed on television or radio and pitch those story ideas. And then last, of course, is social media. You can use your social media accounts to promote CCL and to interact with your local or national news outlets, and to also engage your members of Congress, as Ashley was pointing out. So if you want to get support for generating print media, I recommend joining the Print Media Action Team on CCL Community. And we offer a support call once a month on the third Monday of the month. So that's it for me. So back to you, Ricky.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Hopefully you can hear me now. So that's me on the screen right there. I don't have as fun as a picture as Steve does, but my name is Ricky Bradley. I'm one of the IT folks with Citizens Climate Lobby and focus a lot on our web development and obviously our Citizens Climate University training series. So I'm going to talk to you briefly. If you guys have been around for CCL for quite a while, you know that we've had these levers of political will, and we've talked about in the past that we've had three of them. It's been lobbying, media, and outreach. And then we thought, well, wait a minute, chapter development and our groups are so important. But now that the endorsement program has come along, we've really realized that there's really two different types of outreach as well. And that so that's really what we're going to talk about here, myself and Stephanie next. So the first part of outreach is what we're going to begin calling our grassroots outreach, right? And this is probably very familiar to everyone. This is us recruiting and educating the public on climate solutions, how to participate in your democracy, and how to be a citizen, right? And how to do those things, and how to educate others and do public speaking or tabling. This is really important because, this is our opportunity to reach out and to tell our CCL story, right? And to personally connect with people on a one-on-one basis. And possibly a lot of people that feel really disenfranchised about how do they make their voice heard? It seems like, it is a difficult thing to do nowadays. So this is our opportunity to reach out to those folks and to show them a way that we've learned how to do it in a way that's really effective. It's a very successful way to, like I said, reach out to new volunteers. And it's that whole, educating the public about democratic engagement, even if it's not on our issue. I think it's a worthwhile cause as well, right, to get them involved. So a couple of things you can do for, the grassroots outreach lever. Obviously tabling. So this is exactly what it sounds like, setting up a table at an event, having literature, training yourself to learn how to start conversations with people, how to listen to people to really find out, why they're there and if CCL is something for them. It's not always a recruitment opportunity. A lot of times tabling is just about educating people. A lot of people like to take information and come back 3 months later and ask questions after they've had time to digest it. So, tabling can have lots of different objectives. You could also, for grassroots level, train to be a public speaker and delivering public presentations. We have a whole, another action team, as Steve just mentioned, a print media action team. We have an action team that's totally dedicated to proactive outreach and delivering presentations to different organizations. So if that's something you'd like to do as well, it's another way to get involved. But you know, let's face it, not everyone is very comfortable with going out and speaking to a bunch of people, possibly people you don't know. It can be very intimidating. So there's a lot of organization that has to go into setting up events, tabling events, and public speaking events. So possibly this is something or a way that that you can get involved as well. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to turn it over to Stephanie Doyle, and Stephanie is going to really talk to us about our newest lever of Political Will, that being Grasstops Outreach.
Okay. Can you hear me, Ricky?
Yes, we hear you great.
All right. Awesome. I'm Stephanie Doyle, and I'm our senior outreach liaison. I'm located in DC. And the fourth lever that I'm going to talk about is Grasstops Outreach. And this means educating, building partnerships with, and gaining the support of community leaders and non-governmental organizations, both nationally and locally. And the key difference between grassroots and grasstops outreach is that grasstops involves advocates or organizations with a high profile or a high level of credibility, either publicly or behind the scenes. The grasstops may be a part of the political network for a member of Congress, which is able to draw public attention to an issue or leverage connections to influence decision makers. So what makes grasstops outreach important? So because grasstops have more political influence and can carry our message for us, this is what makes them extremely important. Because the persuasive power of messaging largely hinges on recipients having shared values or a shared political identification, that's what makes working with other organizations really useful. So some opportunities for grasstops outreach can include identifying key experts and leaders in your community and seeking their endorsement as a way of influencing your member of Congress. And this can be endorsements for climate action or for our specific policy. You can educate those same leaders locally about our proposal and talk about how it's going to impact their local community. And then at the national level, for the most part, building partnerships with non-governmental organizations is coordinated by our DC office. Me and Danny work a lot with organizations here, but our local chapters are highly encouraged to meet with and educate national NGOs at the local level. So a lot of the Big Green and other organizations have a lot of local chapters that you can engage with. And so next up is Madeline, who's going to introduce us to group and chapter development.
Great. Thanks, Stephanie. So I'm the program director for Citizens Climate Lobby, and you know, these levers in a lot of ways describe our program, but it's the volunteers, it's you guys who really make everything happen. So a lot of my job is basically about making sure that you have what you need to make things happen in the field, to build political will. So again, the fifth lever is group or chapter development. We use those terms interchangeably, really. And you know, it takes people to push or pull on a lever. And so it's our groups that bring together the people who do all the activities that we've been discussing here. So you know, a group really can vary in size. It could be just one person. We've had some very effective people do that until they got more, up to several dozen volunteers. And they meet regularly to plan meetings with members of Congress, to generate media, and to develop the skills that they need to build political will for a livable world. So why is chapter development critical? Well, you know, if there's no people, then there's nothing happening with those levers. The more people we have, the more it becomes possible to push or pull on the other four levers for building political will. And chapters, you know, they also play a really important social role and help us improve our, what you might call our advocacy well-being. Just when you think about it, it's way more fun and more hopeful to work together as a team to build political will than it is to do that by yourself. So some opportunities for group development include helping with hosting the meetings, which could be setting up, cleaning up, doing publicity, printing materials, contacting members, even providing food. Those are all very helpful things for the meetings to go well. Helping with chapter communications, inviting new members to the meeting, which really hopefully everybody in the group is doing, Responding to inquiries and requests for information, and that could be by phone or by email or by setting up a coffee date. I think the more personal that can be, the better it's going to work. And lastly, one of the important things is mentoring new members, and that would be by getting to know them, by helping them get the information that they need, and helping new members find ways to participate in the work, because that's really what we all came together for, is to take action. So, these levers of political will, one of the things that's useful about them is they can serve as a framework for organizing the work in your chapter. For example, where there's just one or two people starting out with CCL in a community, they might decide to focus mostly on one lever, or to do just a little with each one, or even to alternate from month to month, like which lever they're putting their attention on, but it helps you to think about the different activities. And then when new people join, you can find out which levers they're most interested in and help them get started there. And then if a group has grown to have dozens of people, well, then you could structure the work that people do into teams, could be organized by each lever. So you might have a media team or an outreach team or a lobbying team. And then, sometimes in places where the groups are well established, volunteers have also decided to have a team that works on group development in other communities, so an expansion team. That's another aspect of group development. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to you, Ricky, and we'll see what questions and comments we have.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone. So, we did a very high level overview of the levers of political will. I think in the future, we're going to go take some CCUs and dive specifically into those and go into a lot more detail. But the idea here was as well to leave plenty of time for questions for folks that may have questions about the levers of political will and what they mean exactly. So you should see a little Q&A option in your window right now. So you can click on that. Feel free to type in a question. There was one question I actually received an email before the meeting started. Stephanie, I'm sorry, I probably should have prepped you for this one. So you can go ahead. I had some time. I don't know why I didn't prep you for this. But it was more about that. Someone said, hey, I see that you guys are really starting to focus more on grass tops outreach as well. To dive a little bit more into how does that work, at the local, you touched on it just a little bit, but the local and the national level, say with a group in their example was with the Sierra Club. Like what should we be doing locally with the Sierra Club what should we be doing? What should we not be doing? I guess is really what their question was.
Sure. You were really trying to throw me off today.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. So with a lot of the big organizations, they really take the feedback that they get from their local groups seriously. I engage pretty semi-regularly with a lot of the policy people here in DC, but it really helps when new ideas, I think, rise up from their local level. So the best way, I think, to engage with groups like Sierra Club or other organizations is just be friendly, try to work with them on issues that you can collaborate on. If they're open to having you speak to them about our policy, that's great. They may or may not be, and that's totally fine. Sometimes it's better just to have a relationship with an organization like that than it is to have them endorsing us. So I know there's been some groups who have given talks, but collaborating on events or helping them out is also a great way to be involved at the local level.
Awesome. And that's it's funny. I'm going to not bring it back to me, but I'm going to speak to Sierra Club here in just next month, and I'm just going to be talking about different ways to price carbon. It's not about CCL or trying to recruit their membership. It really is an educational thing, so I think that's part of it as well. But I've learned that too. Like I've learned that it's probably not a good idea to go into another group and try to start recruiting their members. They might not like that too much. Everyone's shaking their heads. Yes, yeah. Everyone agrees.
It's much better. Yeah, it's much better to have a working relationship, I think, and collaborate than to try to poach members or even to convince them on the policy. It's totally okay to have groups working on the climate issue from different angles.
Yeah, great point. So we got a question. I think, Madeline, this is probably directed more towards you. It's about development or chapter development or really recruiting. Maybe we can all chime in, though. But what's the best source of new members? And how do we best recruit people to our effort? Well, that's a big question.
That's a big question, and it's a great one. But I wouldn't say that there's a best source. If I had to pick a best source, I would say that it's the people that are in your life and then the people that are in your fellow volunteers' lives. Because really, it's that personal recruitment that often works the best. When you're excited about CCL and telling people what they're doing and having that hope and energy that comes from working in a team, it attracts other people. Tabling has been useful. Presentations has been useful. Sometimes meetup has worked. It's like CCL people have tried everything in terms of recruitment. And I would say all of those can work. And that the key thing really is to focus when you're interacting with people, wherever it is that you're interacting with them, to focus on the fact that there's not just a problem, but that there's solutions and that you're working with an organization that's engaged in a really positive way on solutions. And that's what'll bring people in, no matter what the vehicle is.
Awesome.
Ricky,
go ahead, Steve.
I'd like to chime in on the recruitment. And I want to put some emphasis on reaching out to somebody. Like we get volunteer match, and a lot of times people come to our intro calls, and our groups get lists of people who are on the intro call and everything. So when you have a new contact for a group, I've found it's really useful to communicate with that person in person. I'll usually call them up and say, hey, would you like to grab a cup of coffee? And you go and meet them for coffee and you talk to them for half an hour or something like that, and really listen to them and see what it is that they're really turned on about, and then you can kind of make that connection between them and how they can fit into your group and so forth. So I would really emphasize, when you have a lead, when you have a contact who might be interested in your group, go ahead and meet up with them sometime and talk to them, and I guarantee they'll show up at your meeting. And if you don't do that, then maybe not so much.
Great. I always like have a drink, but coffee works fine too, if that's what you wanted to see. All right. Let's go. We have a question from anonymous viewer. And I think, Steve, if you'll just stay on, I think this is more directed towards you and towards the media lover. We recently met with the editorial board of our local newspaper. They said they would bring up our ideas at a vote at their next meeting. They did not seem very interested in dealing with our request for an editorial. So, what are some things you can do to, build a better relationship with an editorial board? So maybe give us some tips, Steve.
Excellent question. So hopefully when you met with the editorial board, you established who the person is on the editorial board that your group will be communicating with, and that's a good thing to do, because from time to time, we put out, probably about 3 or 4 times a year, we will put out an editorial packet that reflects something that's going on in the news, and it's a way for us to give the newspaper an excuse to write an editorial about climate change and hopefully to endorse our policy. So if you do have that one person that you communicate with on the editorial board from time to time, and I would say, every couple of weeks or something like that, keep monitoring the newspaper. And when you see something, particularly on the opinion page, that you thought, oh, wow, I'm glad they published this op-ed or that letter or wrote that editorial, give them some good positive feedback, just so that they know you're out there and they're kind of keeping you in mind, so that when it does come time to pitch an editorial to them, you will have developed that relationship with them. And you can also, if you find good editorials in other newspapers, you can share that with them. But I think building the relationship, after the meeting is just as important as the meeting. So that's one of the things that you can be doing. And if they're not, if they're saying that they don't want to write an editorial right away, there are other options. You can, you know, ask, well, how about an op-ed from our group and so forth. And you know, 9 times out of 10, they'll say, yeah, sure, go ahead and submit an op-ed. And again, if they say no to an editorial at a certain point, then just kind of feel them out a little bit and ask, okay, well, we're anticipating that some legislation is going to get introduced next year. So would you be interested in taking another look at it then when a bill actually gets introduced in Congress? Because I think that's a thing that kind of holds back a lot of newspapers from endorsing something is the fact that we don't have a bill that's in play at the moment. So there are a number of things that you can do to keep the relationship going and a number of options that you can present to the newspaper that they can help you out with.
Great. And there is a lesson on community all about meeting with editorial boards that may give you some more ideas, Mr. or Ms. Anonymous viewer. Just search community for that. Tammy asks, and then we got a question from Bill as well. We'll come back to you, Bill, in a second. But Tammy from Panama asks, do you think that giving presentations could serve as grass tops as well as grassroots outreach? In other words, if she's given presentations and then asked for an endorsement from the group. So, Madeline, do you want to take that?
Sure, absolutely. Giving presentations could fit into a number of categories. It can be a source of new members and group development. It can be a source of grassroots outreach. So sometimes, for example, people, and you can incorporate lobbying if you ask like the people in the audience to write their member of Congress. And yes, people have had success also using a presentation as a way to connect with an organization and get their support. Or for example, presentations at Rotary clubs have sometimes led to some high-level endorsements.
Nice, okay. And then, does anyone else want to add anything to that? So I would just say, Tammy, I think you're spot on. It's, like I said at the beginning, these levers can kind of get a little murky. We're just trying to give a little bit of a common language around them, but you're absolutely right. It could be, if you're educating, like Stephanie does, that the Sierra Club national organization, well, yeah, that's probably some grass tops outreach. But if you're reaching out to your local group to help educate them, that could be considered grassroots. So it just really sort of depends. And there's no right way to do it. It's just that you're doing it, right? That's the best thing. So let's see. Bill asks, what about the constituent comment forms? Are they a source of new members? What's your experience with that?
Me? Ricky?
Yeah, sure, Ashley. That'd be great. Yeah, you have had some experience using those too. So tell us.
Yeah, so I absolutely use constituent comment forms for a couple of reasons. One is for recruitment because it's the first opportunity that people
hey, Ashley. Could you maybe explain what, I'm sorry, I probably should explain what the comment form is. I should have done that.
No,
if you'll, okay. But you go ahead, if you'll do that and then,
So constituent comment form is, we have a form on community and the resources section that it has some check boxes at the top about things like how alarmed are you with climate change and what kinds of things particularly are you worried about, like droughts or wildfires or sea level rise. And then there's space at the bottom for people that want to write a message to their member of Congress to write a couple of notes, as to why they're worried about it or what actions they want them to take. And then there's a section at the bottom for the person's contact information, which, of course, if you're sending these in to members of Congress, they need to know the name and the address and that kind of stuff for the person who wrote the letter. So for a lot of outreach events, our volunteers use these comment forms at tables or at presentations. And I even have a couple of volunteers in my chapter that take them to farmers markets when they go shopping at farmers markets in the summer or take them to church. So those have actually been two really great places that we've gotten a lot of letters from. And so the idea here is to collect these letters and our chapter hand delivers them to our member of Congress when we go to meet with them in district, or we could collect them and take them to deliver when we're meeting in DC in June or November. And so we deliver these letters to demonstrate political will that we're building and that we're having a number of constituents that are saying that they want climate action or they specifically want carbon fee and dividend. And locally in our chapter, we absolutely use this for recruitment and getting people engaged. So they take action right away. It's a couple of minutes of their time and they see that we're an organization that values action over just talking about the issue of climate change. And then we also do collect that information from the people who fill out the constituent comment forms, and we put that into our database of potential volunteers for our local chapter, and then that gets updated into CCL national database. And at the bottom of the form, it does say that that we are not going to sell their contact information, but we will use it to contact them through email to see if they want to get more involved. So there is, in that template that we have on community in the resources section, there is that little line that says that we will be contacting them. And locally, we don't use sign-in forms anymore. We use the constituent comment forms because we found that almost everyone that we're interacting with will fill out a constituent comment form because it's a quick action they can take.
Could I just add one thing, Ricky? You're muted, Ricky. Yeah.
Yep, go ahead.
I think the degree to which they are a source of new members, it's going to be very related to how much you follow up personally, like Steve was saying, when you get them. That if you just collect them and then enter them into the database and they get an email, that's not likely to get you much. But if you can personally follow up with people, then that's going to work a lot better.
Yep. I think that's a great point. Let's see. So we have other questions we have. Don asks, what's the best lever to influence a conservative member of Congress? Wow, that is such a fantastic question. I guess since I'm probably the only one in this group, now I look at the panelists that actually lives in a conservative area. Madeline, Wisconsin does not count, and neither does New York.
Yes, it does, buddy.
I have a Republican member of Congress, Ricky.
Oh, that's right. Oh, wait. Steve's in Georgia. Okay,
so yeah, Georgia.
We're all in conservative areas. I would say this, Don. I think that question, I've gotten the best advice from my actual district director or staffer in the office, and we've asked them, what's it going to take to influence Congressman blank, I don't want to tell who it is, but and they will, and once you have that relationship, they will tell you. And for me personally, it's usually been things like, well, you got to go talk to that Chamber of Commerce and get them on board and get their support, that will make it much easier for Congressman blank to support your policy. So it was more around the sort of the grass tops endorsement. They're pretty excited with the organization that we have from a grassroots level, so it's mostly that. But I think it varies for each office, but I think the best thing to do is to ask. Once you get that good relationship with the district or the staffer, just to ask them. Ashley, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I feel like all of these levers interact, and so it's really not, I think, very easy for us to identify with one that we think is more effective than the other. But like, yeah, what Ricky was saying, he was able to ask the staffer in the office what's most important for their office, because every office is going to be different. And so his office says, grass tops or chambers of commerce, whereas my Republican member of Congress, I think really it became a matter of a couple of us built such a great relationship with the office that they're willing to do a lot of things that we ask of them, because now they feel like we have a really great working relationship. And I think that to be able to ask the question that Ricky asked the office, you have to have that foundation of a relationship first to get them to give an answer that's actually going to be meaningful and useful to you. And then, of course, just advocating for what Madeline has talked about tonight, if you have enough of a established chapter in your district, that's, of course, going to help. And then if you're able to demonstrate that you have pull with the local media, whether it be through editorial endorsements or op-eds or letters to the editor, I think that all of these just interact so much. So it's kind of, what you feel like locally for your own particular situation is really important. And I think it does start, though, with developing that relationship with the office so that you can find out what item or which of these levers will persuade them the most.
Yeah, and one of the things we talk about, and that's perfect, exactly right. Actually, one of the things we talk about in the climate advocate training classes is, these levers of political will, every once in a while, it feels like it's stuck. You're like, one of them's stuck, right? And then if that one's stuck, that's great. That was the graphic that we showed in the presentation. You know, you can pull on all those other levers and keep working on those. So try to find out, like Ashley said, you know, what combination of levers is working. But it is a good place to start to maybe just ask the member of Congress if you do have that relationship, or the staffers anyways, they'll help you out with that. Anyone else wanted to add to that, or we'll go to Tammy's question? Okay. Tammy asks, and you know, this is probably something we can all relate to. Following up personally with each person is very, very time consuming and is a rate limiting step for recruitment for sure. You can gather dozens of names of interested people, but then really you don't have a lot of time to see each one of them individually. So do you have any advice on that? Man, what a great question.
Yeah, I've got some. If I'm in a situation where there's a lot of people, like in a presentation, I keep my eye out for who's got a spark in their eye, who's showing the passion, who's asking questions, and I go after that person at the end of the presentation and make a beeline for a small number of high quality people. Same thing with tabling. Actually, when I'm tabling, I put a star or some way to indicate who I particularly want to follow up with. And again, it's those people who were really engaged at the table. And if there's time to do the others, I would. But if there's not, then do your high priority people. And then the other people I'd put the most time into following up with are the ones who show up at your meeting the first time. And they are really worth going out to coffee with, because they've taken the step to come, and you want to draw them in. So we all understand what you're talking about there, Tammy, where there's a lot of people. And then the last thought I have on that is, if you can divide it up, that helps. And just make one round of phone calls, because most of those calls you're going to be leaving a message anyway. But try to share that load.
And thing I'll add is after like a big, we have in Dallas, they have this 3-day Earth Day event, and you can just imagine, we get a list of so many people who just fly by and sign the list. But Madeline's right, putting a little star next to it. But also when that sort of thing happens, and that like a big event like that, I still try to meet with them individually, like Steve was talking about. But what I'll try to do is try to batch it together. So say, hey, I'd like to, and so I just have like a little mini meeting outside of my normal meeting. And so I'll tell everybody, hey, I'm gonna be at Starbucks, this Wednesday night at 6 to 7, I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about it. And, it's a group thing. It's not necessarily one-on-one individually. And that's just, another way of looking at it, another way of considering possibly doing it. But, it's a question I think it just takes lots of different approaches to figure that out. But you just, you can do the best that you can do and be thankful for that. It can be difficult, absolutely. Great question. So no other questions about the lobby levers in the question section. So we'll give it just a couple of minutes for folks to kind of put in some more questions to see if there's anything else, and we can wait for Stephanie's battery to die on her laptop, because we know she forgot her power cord, and see if she just disappears. But if there aren't any other questions, did you guys have anything you wanted to add here? Madeline, do you have anything that you wanted to add at the end? Any other last thoughts?
No, I think this is great.
Wow, Madeline is speechless. This has been, must have been a pretty good wet session tonight.
That's right.
I'll say yeah, something.
Go ahead. Ashley.
So since I'm the liaison coordinator, I'm going to make a pitch for liaisons here. So we do have about 450 liaisons, but some districts and they are the ones who focus on building that relationship with the member of Congress's office. But some of the liaisons that we have are working in pairs or in threes. So there are districts where we do need liaisons. So if you're not sure if your member of Congress has a liaison that's working with their office, you can email us, and we can look that up and see if we need a liaison there. And we have 2 calls a month where I provide support to help people kind of troubleshoot and figure out how to kind of get around some of those hurdles that we sometimes have when we're working with Congress. So the email is liaison.coordinator@citizensclimatelobby.org if anybody wants to learn more about the liaisons program.
Great. Thanks, Ashley. All right. Well, that's it for this evening. Thanks, everyone, for joining. Next week, we have the most exciting lesson ever, and that is how to use the community forums. Wow. Boy, I bet everyone is just dying for that one, but we'll be doing a demonstration of how to use the forums. We'll do, you know, we'll demonstrate it live, how to post, how to reply to topics, how to subscribe and unsubscribe, do all the things that you'd want to do with a message board. And we'll be going through that next week. But that's it for tonight.
Hey, Ricky, yeah. I just want to amend your pitch on the forums, because the forums are a place where members can talk directly to each other, and it, you know, that can be hard to find sometimes. So
it's
enjoy the forums.
Well, and also, like, people, you know, Bill had some great questions tonight, Tammy had some great questions tonight. There are forums that you can go in and ask those questions, and people have that real-time response, or not real-time, but, you know, people get emails and they get notified and people respond, and you get the breadth of, you know, all the knowledge from all the CCL volunteers from across the country and across the world that can chime in and help out with those answers. So definitely you'll want to spend some time. So that's a pitch to register next week for how to use the community forums. What a great lesson that'll be. All right. Good night, everybody. Have a great night. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Steph. Thank you. Thanks, Ashley. Thanks, Madeline. Good night. And the meet. Goodbye. Oop.